Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John, engineering and producing the show. Welcome to the Buckmaster program. It's Monday, June 7th, 2021, and without the support of tons of people, I would not be back in front of this microphone 3 weeks to the day after, yes, I misjudged a step on a glorious afternoon at Resurrection Bay in Seward, Alaska. Can you imagine the first full day of the long-awaited trip to the Northland? And yes, in the blink of an eye, I wound up on the cold, hard concrete and knew immediately I had broken my right arm below the shoulder. Friends like hundreds of you on social media and strangers up in Alaska like the attending physician at the emergency room in Seward, Alaska says, "Aren't you Bill Buckmaster?" I said, "Yes. I grew up in Tucson and I watched you every night with my parents. We had our TV trays and we ate our dinner and you were on the television on Arizona Illustrated." You talk about a small world. Anyway, we move forward. Nature's now doing its thing with the bone healing. So the long road to regain mobility will begin in about a week. Already have my first scheduled physical therapy appointment. Want to say thank you to the guest hosts, Zach Yenzer, Dan Shear, Shelley Fishman, Ryan Hansen, Dan Gibson, and Ben Bueller Garcia for making sure that the radio audience was covered with great content-filled programs. So the vacation was not what I had imagined, what anyone could have imagined, but reality is, hey, it is what it is. You play the cards that you are dealt in life, and I'm playing my hand the best I can and playing it right now with our Monday political face-off. John Munger is here. John, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents and one-time Republican candidate for governor. Hey, John, how are you?
Great, Bill. Sorry about your accident.
Oh, thank you very much. Jeff Rogers is here, also well-known Tucson attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's kind of a hot weekend, but I guess we're in for a few months of that now.
Yeah, but compared to last year, we had by this time, I think, at least triple the number of over 100 degree days. So yeah, maybe this will be a normal kind of June with some normal rains. But unfortunately, the fire season is already a big fire burning up by Superior. I think it's at 34,000 acres already. And it was a year ago that we had our horrible fire in the Tucson, in the Catalinas. And that went on, John, for 7 weeks.
That's right.
So yeah, that was a long one.
Anyway, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, one of our great sponsors, family owned and run since 1985. They've been with us since we began the radio show, now in our 11th year. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Check them out. They've got some great stuff right now on their e-commerce. All right, Jeff and John, the situation many Democrats, Jeff, are irate with Senator Sinema, a Democrat, especially for her not agreeing to get rid of the Senate filibuster.
Well, I can tell you that there are an awful lot of people I know who are really, really angry with Kyrsten Sinema. And I think it's a foolish decision on her part for a lot of reasons. One, you know, these bills that are Republicans are passing all across the nation to limit voting, they're going to limit the kind of voters who may well have voted for Kyrsten Sinema. I mean, you're going to reduce the base of voters that would turn out for Democrats likely by a large margin if these kinds of measures pass and if Congress doesn't do something to intercede. And so, you know, it's foolish in the long run for her, and she's angering her sentiment, her base. And let me tell you a short story that kind of summarizes what she's at risk of doing. She thinks she has to appeal to moderates and independents. Well, let me tell you what. Ron Barber was under that same mistaken illusion when he lost by some 200 votes to Martha McSally in his second full term election. And I tell you, I was a participant in the random hand count audit. that took place on the following Saturday, as it does every year. And by the way, it always has turned out perfect. And I cannot tell you the countless ballots I saw where people voted a straight Democratic ticket and left the bubble empty for Ron. And I think Ron was a superb congressman and deserved to be reelected, but he made some early on mistakes that antagonized his liberal base, particularly environmentalists and some other people. And so, you know, that's what she really risks here. She's, you know, if your base doesn't color in the bubble for you, then you're going to lose. And I just don't think she realizes that. I think she's sort of full of herself as being this really important congresswoman or senator now, that's wielding a lot of perceived power. And I think she's being seduced by that. And I tell you, if I were 15 years younger, I'd be running against her in a primary.
She's not, though, up next year, is she?
No, she's up in 2024. Oh. And there'll be a large turnout because that'll be a presidential year again.
Yeah. But that's still quite a ways away.
But, and in a way, Joe Manchin today, or yesterday, actually, when he wrote that editorial, has sort of given her some cover because he's ruled out voting against getting rid of the filibuster as well. So right now, I'd say President Biden's agenda is in deep trouble because of the filibuster and because Republicans won't cooperate, won't do anything in a bipartisan fashion, and we have the only Democrats who could make a change in that, refusing to do so.
What do you think, John?
Well, I think that you start with the position that 2 years ago, all of the before they took the House and Senate, or the Senate, the Democrats were all against eliminating the filibuster. Oh, no, they didn't want to eliminate the filibuster. They were all for the filibuster. Now that they have alleged control of the Senate, oh, they want to eliminate the filibuster. They've completely flip-flopped, and they want to pass their radical progressive agenda and ram it down the throats of everybody else in the country. And the whole point of the filibuster in the Senate was to stop that kind of partisan effort. It's worked for over a century, and the Democrats are upset because Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin won't kowtow to their radical agenda. Voting rights are state issues. Voting, how we vote, are in the Constitution as a state issue. Each state determines voting rights. The Democrats, for example, want to pass this federal bill that outlaws voter IDs. Well, every country in the world, developed country in the world, requires voter ID. They know that you need voter IDs. The Democrats call it voter suppression to require a voter ID. That's baloney. Nobody agrees with that. No other country agrees with that. The American public, by a great majority, agrees we got to have voter IDs. But the main issue is, constitutionally, you can't take these voter issues away from the states and federalize it.
And that's what this would do.
And that's what this does.
Jeff, does it?
Well,
does it? Do this?
Well, it does it to an extent. The
does
the
it
federal
completely.
Voting the current version of the Federal Voting Rights Act has withstood constitutional scrutiny for about 50 or 60 years now. So that's not going to be a problem. The Constitution says that states shall determine a time, place, and manner of elections, and that's about it. It doesn't elaborate on it any further than that. So there is no doubt in my mind that if they pass what is called House Resolution 1, that it would uphold constitutional scrutiny from the Supreme Court and any other court that it gets to before that. So I'm not concerned about that. It is an awfully broad bill. If it were my bill, I'd probably cut down on a few of the things and make it a little more bare bones so that it's a real clear-cut example of just expanding voting rights and allowing the states not to tamper with those voting rights and not to engage in voter suppression. That would be my goal with it, and not to do what sometimes we call a Christmas tree, a little present for everybody in a bill. And sometimes I think we're better off with something that's more bare bones.
Well, here's the problem. The states as Jeff just cited, the states are in charge of the time, place, and manner of voting in a state. We're not talking about the Voting Rights Act. We all agree with the Voting Rights Act. That should be upheld. That's fine. The Voting Rights Act is against, has certain provisions in it. You can't violate those provisions. This is the federal government monopolizing the manner in which all states, every state, conducts its elections. Whether or not there's a voter ID, they've eliminated voter IDs. They've taken all voting rights away from the states. They will set up a system of allocating their own system, but from the federal government, of allocating where the House seats go, take it away from the states, and we will be losing all of our rights.
All right, John, pause right there, and Jeff, you'll have the rebuttal when we continue. But right now, on the Buckmaster Show, I want to talk about the best breakfast I have had ever yesterday up at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Maybe it's I haven't gotten out much lately, but I'll tell you, I got out yesterday. My lovely wife, Ann, insisted, hey, we're going out for breakfast. And we went up and had a wonderful breakfast. They are just doing so well up at Mona's Danish Bakery. And Jeff, you will understand this when I give you what I had yesterday. Couple of eggs over easy. And then a beautiful rustic bread right out of the toaster, and then they butter it for you. So it's ready just to sop up that egg. And then here's the crowning glory, Jeff, the bacon. And
I'm a bacon fan.
Owner and chief baker, Steve, came over and said, try this. This just came out. Some more bacon. I said, man, I can go for it. I've got a broken arm. I need protein. So I really gorged on bacon yesterday.
Did you have those interesting, delicious potatoes?
Well, you know I did, and that added it was a huge, humongous breakfast, but it just tasted so good to me. And Steve said, hey, I am working so hard that we're going to do summer hours, so we're closed now Monday. He needs a day off. First of all, it is hard for restaurants, Jeff and John, to find help.
Yeah.
So Steve was up there yesterday waiting on tables and everything else. So there are openings, if you're interested, up at Mona's Danish Bakery. Anyway, I had a great breakfast. Check it out, monasdanishbakery.com. They're on summer hours right now, which basically means Mondays they are closed, and they close a little bit earlier in the afternoon. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster with our Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. John Munger seated to my right, Jeff Rogers to my left. Be right back.
Mining, so important. It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our live line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, and of course our Monday political face-off. Our title sponsor is Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. We have Jeff Rogers here, Jeff, the former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party, and John Munger, the former Republican candidate for Arizona governor, and he was also the chair of the statewide party for quite a while. One thing, Jeff, we were talking about Senator Sinema, former Arizona Attorney General Grant Woods, who prominently backed Senator Sinema, is now pretty upset, saying he says that she now needs to support getting rid of the filibuster. She's really fallen out of favor with Grant, who is a very prominent now Democrat.
Well, longtime Republican, yeah. Only recently a Democrat.
He's been a Democrat forever in reality.
He was elected twice as Attorney General as a Republican. And like Terry Goddard and like some of the many people before them, he kept that job fairly apolitical, as it well should be, because it being our chief law enforcement officer. But yeah, he's expressed a great deal of discontent with her, as have a lot of Democrats. I mean, I doubt if she would have the guts to show up at a Democratic quarterly meeting for the state committee, because she'd probably be booed out of the room. And I've had to deal with, many times as the chairman of the resolutions committee for 10 years or more at the state party, I had to deal with a lot of what I called progressive Democrats who really had some, outlandish ideas that were pretty lefty. And we have had to deal with that periodically. But I don't think that's the group. I think it's pretty much everyone is angry at Kyrsten Sinema. I don't think she really understands just how angry the rank and file Democrats are at her right now.
John, summarize your remarks so Jeff can rebuttal them about the filibuster before the break.
Well,
for those that are just joining us, give us a
Let me go to H.R. 1, bill that we've been talking about. That bill not only talks about eliminating states' rights with regard to voting and the manner of voting, time and place in voting, but it also mandates that Washington, D.C. would become a state. That's in there. Yes, it does, Jeff. Yes, it is in there.
I support that, but I don't think
it is in there. It sets up a funding for government financing of federal campaigns. So you get a 6-to-1 match, $6 for every $1 a candidate raises. You get federal funding of 6-to-1. So we're now going to have all the candidates in office running on federal money. It's a self-financing campaign by the Democratic incumbents.
So you're saying it's a huge goodie bag.
It's a huge goodie bag for the Democrats. And let me tell you, the Democrats themselves were against ending the filibuster when the Republicans were in control of the Senate, and they were right to be against it.
The Republicans ended it for Supreme Court justices, famously, didn't they?
They ended it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no filibuster allowed.
That was only after the Democrats first ended it with regard to all other federal
judges.
We didn't
end it with Supreme Court justices.
The Democrats ended the filibuster when they had control of the Senate. They ended the filibuster being able to stop appointments of all federal judges short of the Supreme Court. It's called the nuclear option. They did that, and we said, you're going to regret it because we will end it with regard to the Supreme Court. And it happened. The Democrats got all upset about it, having first pulled the trigger on the nuclear option for all other federal judges. And we told them, don't be doing this.
All right.
At some point, the Republicans are going to take back control of the Senate, and the Democrats are going to be screaming for the filibuster again.
Jeff, this goodie bag.
Well, here's what's going to happen. Is that the Republicans, when they get in control of the Senate again, they're going to end the filibuster.
No,
there's
any
doubt in my mind that they'll end the filibuster.
No, they'll
end it when they...
Yeah, of course they will.
No.
The Republicans, I got to give them one bit of respect here. They are much better at being disciplined and bare-knuckled in their politics. Democrats are wimps when it comes to doing things, you know, forcefully that they need to do, and Republicans aren't. When they get control of something, they ram through everything they can, and we live to regret it. But let me tell you the most important thing about H.R. 1 and these Voting Rights Acts. These Voting Rights Acts need to create some kind of uniformity. It shouldn't matter if you live in a red state or a blue state how tough it is for you to vote. You ought to be able to vote under roughly the same considerations in every state in America. And what we're seeing is the states that Republicans control, they are making it more and more difficult for people to vote. And Democrats don't agree with that. We think everybody should have an equal opportunity to vote. But Republicans understand, and they're smart in understanding this, that if it's a full, free, and fair election and everybody has a chance to vote, Republicans will lose a lot more often than they'll win. And so they've got to stack the deck. And that's what they're engaged in doing in something like 25 Republican-controlled states.
Yeah, let me go back to the filibuster. The Republicans actually debated the issue of ending the filibuster when they were in control of the Senate last session. And they decided not to end the filibuster. You look back in all the records, and the Republicans stood up and said, no, the filibuster is a guarantee that we have to have 60 votes in the Senate to get certain things passed to protect the people and to make sure that things are not just rammed through on a partisan basis. The Republicans have long been on record for not ending the filibuster, starting with Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate leader. Then you talk about the red states, blue states. Did you know that Joe Biden's Delaware doesn't have early voting?
What?
They don't have all the things that Texas and Arizona has. We allow more voting than the blue state of Delaware. Who's afraid of voter suppression? It's the Democrats in states like Delaware.
Well, why are Republicans in Arizona, after going 20 years of having one of the best voting records in the nation, and actually one of the best voting systems, most accurate, most fair, why are they trying to change it to make it harder to vote?
We aren't changing it to make it harder to vote.
They are.
By what? Requiring voter ID?
No, one thing they're doing, no, we already have that in Arizona. What they're doing is they're taking people off of the permanent early voter list if they miss an election. Now, is that fair?
What purpose is that, John?
What purpose does that serve?
Because you give notice. First, they have to give... Because people can vote in two states. It's a highly mobile society, and we have no way of... Jeff, let me finish. We have no way of keeping track who's moving, who's still alive. The Democrats want to be able to vote some dead guy.
Trump's great line. Hundreds of thousands of
dead people voted. This was him in North Carolina.
We have in our state, as I talked about in my previous session, a method by which we check early voting to make sure that the signature on your early ballot is the same signature that historically you've signed. The Democrats want to make it. I apply for a ballot today in Jeff's name, and I apply for that ballot, and I sign Jeff Rogers. And you know what? Then when I put my ballot in, it's my same signature for Jeff Rogers. And they say, well, that's fine because John Munger applied for the ballot in Jeff's name, and it's the same signature.
Oh, okay.
That's what they're doing.
All right. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Thank you very much, Jeff Rogers. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again. Get better.
I hope so. John, thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. I hope you feel better.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com, the proud sponsor of our Monday Political Face-Off. General Wickham is coming up next. We'll be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com. MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
Greetings. Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, our go-to place for everything beautiful for your garden. Yes, it's going to be very, very hot. The hot weather's coming up. We've avoided the post-105 temperatures, but it looks like that will be settling in over the weekend. So it'll be a good time to make a trip over to Green Things and ask the question, what will survive the heat and make it to the upcoming rainy season, which we hope is only a few weeks away. Green Things, located on their beautiful 13-acre site, 3384 East River Road, and they are also there on the same site, home to Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise, much of it handcrafted in Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We go on the live line now for our military and foreign advisor, retired four-star general John Wickham Jr. General Wickham served as the U.S. Army Chief of Staff from 1983 to 1987. He was Commander-in-Chief of the UN Command and Commander of the United States Forces in Korea. He's the author of the book Korea on the Brink. General Wickham was critically wounded in Vietnam, spent over a year in the hospital recovering. He returned to Vietnam, where he was responsible for negotiating the release of all of the prisoners of war, a 1950 graduate of West Point. The Army Times names General Wickham one of the 10 leaders who most changed the Army. General Wickham, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, Bill, and appreciate the opportunity to be on your wonderful program, which does a wonderful job in informing the citizens here of good issues.
General Wickham, the United States Supreme Court today declined to hear a challenge to a federal law that requires only men to register for the military draft. This is a requirement. It's one of the last sex-based distinctions, General Wickham, in federal law, one that the challengers say cannot be justified now that women are allowed to serve in every role in the military, including ground combat. Unlike men, though, they are not required, the women, to register with the Selective Service System. Any thoughts on this decision?
I think it's a mistake. We all are citizens in America, male and female, we're all God's children, and we're all equal. And so we all have the obligation to serve. And so I do believe that the draft and the current situation that you outlined there is wrong. We need to give women the equality that they deserve from birth.
I agree with you, General Wickham. I think, you know, let's make the Selective Service open to men and women. And after all, as I pointed out, women are now serving in all of the branches and pretty much every capability in our military.
That's right. I remember when I became commander of the 101st Airborne Division, I was sitting down with the military police people and the post authorities who were managing the post, and we had a discussion about getting women involved in the military police. The military people were against it. They didn't think that women could do the job and that they would be ineffective in arresting people or challenging people that were doing wrong things. Well, I debated them. I said, no, women are part of our country, and we're going to give them equal opportunity. Well, that didn't go down well, but we did that, and so we were one of the military posts that had equality started from the very beginning, and it worked in many, many ways. An interesting kind of a thing, a lot of the things that we started when I was a commander there, they're still doing. Cars have been damaged in accidents. They're still doing that. Cars at the entrance or exit to the post. And the big sign up there, we counted every day, accident-free days. And when you got to 101 days, everybody on the post got a day off.
Wow.
And they're still doing that. So it's a wonderful kind of a situation to have worked on a military place that continues.
And for the 101st, everybody gets a day off if there have been no accidents for 101 days. That makes good sense to me. General, I want to talk a little bit about a real serious issue. We are pulling out of Afghanistan. We're pulling out now earlier than expected. The pullout is actually in July. Things are going to be really heating up. But unfortunately, the Taliban has taken this as a signal to pretty much attack the rear guard.
I think it's a mistake. We don't have many troops there. And basically, the troops that we have there are advisors, and particularly advising the government. As you know, we pay the bills for the government, and that's what is important to do, is have a capability in that region that can survive. And how do we help them? We help them by doing what we're doing. I remember when I was just recently looking into things with the combat units that were involved in the war in Vietnam. And I realized, golly days, if we take troops out of a unit when we took them out of Vietnam, and we therefore were unable to share intelligence properly with the South Korean units. And it was a mistake, because if we went to war again, you're going to have to share intelligence. And if the units do not have the capability to absorb the intelligence, and then you're not going to be quality on the battlefield. So it took a while to get that organized again, but my predecessors let it go down. So I think it's a mistake for us to get out of the region there. As I've said on your wonderful program before, the solution to Afghanistan has to be regional, and we need to sit down with the
Indians, the Pakistanis, the regional players, sure.
British, yeah. And figure out the best way to go about settling the war. And the way we're doing it is not the best way, in my humble opinion.
Well, the New York Times over the weekend was saying the CIA is trying to figure out now how they are going to still figure out how that the American government is still going to have a hand in Afghanistan with all of our troops withdrawn. We could be looking at a real mess over there, General Wickham.
That's right, Bill. That's right. And I support the idea of leaving eventually.
Yes.
But on the other hand, eventually, we need the capability there. And golly days, we've got the capability. And we do share intelligence. Not only sharing intelligence, we do advising the Afghan units. And if we can advise them to do a better job to save their own people and to be more effective on the battlefield, let's do that. So I think that we have that kind of capability. And to cut it off is not a proper thing to do. I do support Joe Biden and what he does as president. But I think in this case, he's got some bad advice.
All right, General Wickham, always a pleasure catching up with you. We will catch up with you in July. Thank you very much for your service.
Well, thank you, Bill. And again, I appreciate your wonderful program and the vendors that support it.
Thank you very much, General John Wickham, with his monthly visit to the Buckmaster Show on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Our Mexico report with Keith Rosenblum is next. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you back in the saddle again. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. I can't think of a better weekend to head over to Silver City as we push 105 and a bit higher. I give you the Buckmaster Show guarantee. It will be at least 10 degrees cooler at the mile-high elevation of about anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 feet over in Silver City. It will be worth your while to take the three-hour drive and enjoy yourself in the Gila National Forest. Just enjoy the very cool evenings and very pleasant days. Start your planning now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now our Mexico contributor, Keith Rosenblum, longtime border reporter and current observer of all things going on in Mexico, Keith Rosenblum. Keith, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing well. I think you may have eliminated the word sharp observer from the presentation. I just want to know if that's because during the last program I kept forgetting things and forgot even your identity. Anyway, a pleasure to hear from you. And I'm in Phoenix, where good. There have been many sightings of you asking people, are you from Tucson, near Sky Harbor, and then trying to get them to go back.
Hey, did you happen to read my friend Tim Steller's columnist about, several dozen candidates in this, I guess you call the midterm election, had been killed in the politics have become very, very dangerous in Mexico?
Well, there's a lot to account for. There's so many things, and I've had today, between yesterday and today, I've had a number of hours to ponder exactly what just happened in the midterm elections and also the significance of the violence and where Mexico is in June of 2021. I think I can now share it. I've been waiting to be kind of a bot or like an oracle of truth.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed for all these things to sink in and then for them all to be mixed up and to figure out exactly what's happening in Mexico. So let me start with, I'll address that issue.
Okay.
Let me first explain to you that in the midterm elections yesterday, and there's still some counting to do, the Morena Party, which is the party that was founded by President López Obrador, won 12 of 15 governorships, which catapults it into a category that it never had before, because the party is relatively new. And it also lost just a handful of seats in the Mexican Congress. So what it does is essentially keeps President López Obrador's grip on the political system very much intact. It doesn't give him quite the number of deputies. The Mexican House of Representatives has 300 reps or deputies who are elected by popular vote. And then Mexico does something really interesting. We've talked about this before. They have what's called the plurinominal, or representative deputies. So there's 300 who are elected on the basis of where you live, you know, like Arizona, we have 9 seats, I've lost track. Or, you know, California has something in the 40s or whatever. So Sonora, for example, has, I think, 7 deputy congressional seats. Anyway, they have these, the popular reps are 300. And the Morena Party has a very sound grip on those, which is probably 180, I think, of those deputies. And then in turn, because what the Mexicans did to make sure that they don't have a winner-takes-all, like a 41-59, or I'm sorry, 51-49, where the person who gets barely gets a majority takes everything, the Mexicans have then a proportional representation. So party votes do matter. So you go, you look at the totality of the vote, you say, well, okay, yeah, you know, the Morena Party won 181 seats on popular election, but there's an awful lot of people who need to be represented, so we're going to go ahead and have these other 200 seats, we're going to go ahead and divvy them up among the ideology of the country, the other parties. It's a fascinating system, and it probably is more representative than us, than the U.S. system. But anyway, what happened yesterday appears to be that the Morena Party did very, very well. And everybody viewed, even though the president wasn't on the ballot, he's been in office for 2.5 years now, he was not on the ballot, it was very much a referendum on his policies. And his policies got a big affirmation yesterday from the, whatever they are, 90 million people who were eligible to vote. I think it was 2/3 of that actually voted.
And now your thoughts on the violence question, Keith Rosenblum.
Well, the violence question is this. For a long time, the mafias of Mexico had pipelines simply to the upper level leadership. And so lower levels were exempted. Local police forces, you know, it'd be like we would say, yeah, like the DEA, okay, they're in charge of our drug program, right? And drugs are a federal issue, not really. So you're not going to be training DPS officers or TPD or PCSO. You're really not going to be training them to have big units of drug interdiction. There are issues and they'll come up, but in Mexico for the longest time, the drug portfolio, the mafia portfolio, was a federal issue. And in recent years, it's kind of filtered down now to where there is much more local level participation. Am I petrified or put off or anything by the violence that went on prior to this election? You know what? It bothers me, but I don't think of it as being something that is really indicative of where the country is. I think that a lot of the shooting, a lot of the violence that took place was with very specific candidates with very specific issues. It wasn't something that, in other words, that was to intimidate the masses. It was something where they were hits. They were hits on people that didn't make agreements with particular groups ahead of time. I'm not condoning that. I'm just saying that there's you know, Mexico's 120 million people, and it's 32 states, and there were so many offices, and what you're going to hear about was the electoral violence in a place like Obregón, which anyway has become a kind of a ground zero for lots of drug issues, and a place like, you know, Guerrero, where there's almost an ongoing thing, and sometimes it's not even related to drugs, it's related to other kinds of ongoing disputes. So I don't want to minimize it, but I also don't want to say that the country has been brought to its knees by violence in elections, because it hasn't been. I personally knew, by the way, Abel Murrieta, who was the guy that was assassinated in Obregón about 3 weeks ago or a month ago. He was running for mayor. I knew Abel. He was the attorney general of Sonora. Very decent guy. He actually went through two different administrations from different political parties because they liked him as an attorney general. And it's unclear to a lot of us that know him what it was that happened. We don't know. Anyway, so I just want to say that it's of course, it's something always to worry about. And one of the things that happens in Mexico is that so many of those crimes are never solved. And so you get away with these things more than you should. There's too much impunity in the country, and that's just been a fact of life for a long time. And until the police forces and the National Guard, which is like a national police force, until they're more professional, until they have better training, and there's more of them, that'll continue. The impunity is wrong. But I just spent, I think I mentioned this to you in a previous broadcast, but I just took my family to, and six of us went from Ciudad Juarez. We flew from Juarez. We went to León, Guanajuato. We went to Teotihuacan near Mexico City. We went to Cholula in the state of Puebla. And we don't, you know, we travel on buses, and we travel in taxis, and we travel. And it's not because we blend in when we travel. We don't stand out as being, oh, those are tourists. And I can tell, as I say, my travels in northern Mexico myself, I never look over my shoulder. I insist to this day that the violence of Mexico is internecine. It is among family. It's among people who are in the game, which is what happened during the days of Elliot Ness and the Untouchables and the Purple Gang and all the gangs in our cities, where so much of the violence was between gang members or people who had some, some skin in the game.
All right, Keith, I've only got about 40 seconds, so your answer will have to be very short. Third point, Wall Street Journal says that the Obregón, or the López Obregón's government is a threat to democracy. Do the results from the election yesterday play into that narrative? I've got
absolutely
less than 20
seconds. The Wall Street Journal's right. The article's right. The man is messianic. And he was not only sees himself as being elected, but he really does see himself as being anointed. He is there by divine. And if you listen to his press conferences, which I urge your listeners to do every morning between 7 and no, our time between 5 and 7, but you can watch it rebroadcast. You can listen to this guy just drone on forever. He is a threat to democracy. And if you ever give him the supermajority that he needs, which is 2/3 of the Congress, mm-hmm. he will legislate himself into an emperor position.
Wow. All right. Interesting points. Keith Rosenblum, as usual. Thank you very much, Keith. Have a great day.
I appreciate the opportunity. Bye-bye.
All right. Buckmaster Show wrapping it up. The Buckmaster Return to the Airways show. Wrapping up our Monday edition, we've got Dave Ramsey coming up next on 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk, Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, and our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Thanks to my friend John Couch, engineering and producing. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great day.